This up here is my hometown, Effingham, Illinois, population 12,000 and change. And Effingham, Illinois is a small Midwestern farm town, very similar to York in many respects. But one of the things that's unique about my hometown is that we had in our town what some people would call a local celebrity, although I think the more accurate term is a local legend. In fact, I can assure you that aside from children that were too young to know anything, pretty much every one of those 12,000 people knew who this person was. Not only that, but pretty much many of the people in the surrounding towns knew who this person was. In fact, a lot of times, people from the surrounding towns would come to Effingham to eat or to shop, and while there, they would just hope to be able to catch a glimpse of this person. And this local legend from our town was a man named Granville Davis. Granville was our local transvestite. He only wore women's clothing. And when I say only wore women's clothing, I mean 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, women's clothing was all that he wore. And by women's clothing, I mean exclusively dresses. In fact, I think he's wearing one of his pink numbers on that day. And Granville particularly favored short dresses, which was unfortunate because he really didn't have the legs to pull it off. And then he would go into Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he would go into Kentucky Fried Chicken and he'd get like some of those little boxes that you put the chicken in, and he would wear that as a hat just to kind of make the ensemble pop. Well, as with any legend, you know, there are usually stories and rumors that circulate around a legend, and that was certainly the case with Granville. There were many people in town wanted to know what his story was. Why is he like this? Why does he dress like this? And nobody knew the answers. He was a bit of a mystery and an enigma. That, of course, didn't stop the rumors from circulating. I remember hearing stories about him being dropped on his head as a child. Some people, you know, speculated that he had mental problems, and there may have been some of that. I know one time when he was asked specifically why he did it, he framed it as a social protest. He said that, you know, society had allowed for women to start wearing men's clothing, you know, blue jeans and suits and so forth, so that as long as women were allowed to wear men's clothing, he was going to wear women's clothing in protest. Personally, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that Granville, I think, just liked to be the center of attention. And in a small, conservative, Midwestern town, you know, when you're walking around town in your high top sneakers, wearing a short summer dress and sporting a full beard, you get noticed pretty quickly. Now, a lot of that attention, though, as you can probably imagine, was not necessarily positive. There were a number of people in our town that did not want Granville there. I can't tell you the number of times that he was beaten up, the number of local business owners that banned him from their shops, would not allow him to come in. In fact, there was one local business owner that once bought Granville a one-way bus ticket to California. They figured, you know, we'll ship him out to California, they won't even notice him there. Well, in our town, we had a mall. It was called the Village Square Mall, and I had a lot of associations with that mall. My father owned the ice cream shop in the mall. It was called Dipper Dan, and it had the best location. It was right in the center of the mall, right on the corner, kind of the perfect location. Right across the hall from that, my mother owned the bookstore in the mall. And so when I was little, too young to stay home by myself, and both of my parents had to go to work, you know, they'd throw me in the car, take me to the mall, and set me loose. And the mall became my babysitter. So I got to know every inch of that mall. And much of my childhood, you know, there are many days in my childhood that were spent with me sitting in that bookstore, reading all the free comic books that I wanted to, then walking across the hall and getting free ice cream whenever I wanted. Now, that's not a bad childhood. Well, the mall back then was the main social gathering place. You know, if you were a teenager in Effingham back then and it was a Friday night, eventually you would make your way to the mall. So it wasn't really surprising that of all the places in town, Granville's favorite place to go was the mall. And his favorite place to go in the mall was my dad's ice cream shop. And so he would come in the mall and he'd walk in the ice cream shop and the place would empty out. You know, people didn't want to be in there if he was in there. And there were many times where people went to my father and said to him, you know, you need to kick Granville out, ban him from coming in your shop. like the other shop owners in town have done, because as long as he's in there, I'm not going in, and he's hurting your business. But to his credit, my father never once listened to any of them. Not one time did he ever kick Granville out. And I can remember many times as it was getting towards the end of the day, walking by and looking in, and there would only be two people in there. Granville would be sitting at the table, my dad be behind the counter, and they'd just be talking, sometimes for hours. Well, I grew up, went away to college, got married, got a job, as people do. And then one day I got an email from my mother telling me that Granville had died. And Granville's death had a massive impact on our town. His death forced everybody in our town to kind of reflect on the life that he had lived, reflect on the way that sometimes the town had treated them. It caused them to reflect on their own interactions with Granville and think about things like judgmentalism and compassion. And it really caused this great moment of reflection. And it made people think about just kind of the impact that Granville had and what he meant to our town. My mother told me that she drove by the funeral home when the visitation was going on, and the line of people to get in went out the door and around the corner. Now, to be fair, I imagine some of those people were just there to see what he was wearing, but still, it's a pretty good testimony. A few days later, they held the funeral, and it was standing room only, and even the mayor was in attendance. And for weeks afterwards, our little daily newspaper was flooded with letters to the editor of people wanting to talk about Granville, talking about what we learned from him, the impact that he had on our town, talking about their interactions with him. And throughout all of those letters, there was one theme that kind of rose to the top, and that was people talking about just how kind Granville was, that he was the kind of person who would do anything for anybody, that he would always do these little acts of kindness for people, unbidden, expecting nothing in return. And that's just the way that he was, and he was kind to everybody, no matter how badly they treated him. And I experienced a little bit of that myself. I remember when I was about 10 or 11 years old, I went out to the mall, and I had a stack of football cards with me. It was probably about this thick, wrapped in a rubber band. And I walked into my dad's ice cream shop, and Granville was in there. Now, I had never spoken a word to Granville in my life at that point, nor he to me. I was a kid. But I walked in, and Granville said, "What do you got there?" And I said, "Football cards." He said, "Do you like football?" I said, "Yeah." End of the conversation. Now, it was no big deal. I didn't think much of it until the next night when my dad got home from work. He walked in the front door, and he came up to me, and he handed me this big box, and I looked in it, and it was full of football cards. And he said, "Granville gave this to me to give to you. He thought you might like it." That was just the kind of person Granville was, just kind to everybody, giving to everybody, expecting nothing in return. Well, about a year ago, I was sitting in my office up in Michigan, and for some reason I was thinking about Granville that afternoon. And I don't know why, I hadn't thought about him in quite a while, but for some reason he was on my mind. So on a whim, I just decided to type his name into Google and see what would pop up. Well, what popped up is I discovered that about 2 years ago, there was somebody who started an online petition demanding that my town of Effingham, Illinois, erect a statue of Granville Davis. Now, that's something I'd like to see. I mean, I kind of have this mental picture of this giant statue on the front lawn of the courthouse, Granville sitting on his bicycle with his high-top sneakers and a short flowery summer dress and a full beard. That would be a tourist attraction. And I think it's something that Granville would have loved. But this petition, which they haven't quite reached their goal yet, but they're getting there. It's been up for a couple of years, but it's still active. I mean, I just took this screenshot a few days ago, and you can see the last person to sign the petition was 13 days before that. So hey, if you want to go sign Granville's petition, maybe we can get him that statue after all. But many of the people that signed this petition posted comments on there. And you can go and you can read through the comments. And again, you'll see that same theme popping up of just how kind Granville was to everybody, no matter how badly he was mistreated, and how he treated everybody with compassion and generosity. Granville died, I think, it was around 2002. So he's been dead for, you know, more than 20 years. And it's kind of a testimony to the impact that he had on our town that 20 years later, people are still putting up petitions to get a statue of him. There's a Facebook page of Memories of Granville. That 20 years later, the impact he had on our town is still staying with us and still shaping us. Now, those of you who are in my Story of Jesus class this semester, you're probably sick of hearing me say this by now. But one of the things we see in the Gospel of Luke is that in the Gospel of Luke, we meet a Jesus who sought out people who were marginalized, who sought out the disenfranchised, the poor, the sinners, the outcasts, you know, the kind of people that respectable society wanted to forget, people very much like Granville. And one of the things I think that Jesus was challenging us with through that is I think he was challenging us with the notion that sometimes the favor and the grace of God can be most profoundly experienced in the most unlikely of places and with the most unlikely of people. And that was the lesson that Granville taught to my little town. And I wanted to share it with you this morning in the hopes that maybe you might be blessed as well from the life that Granville lived. Thank you.